This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The world of death certificates is filled with complexities.
Determining the cause of death is not always straightforward.
But how can this impact the way we view health statistics in the United States? It's Wednesday, August 28th, and this is Science Friday. I'm SciFri Radio Fellow Valeria Diaz. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the maternal mortality rate in the United States is very high compared to other wealthy countries, about 22.3 maternal deaths per 100,000 live births. This is on par with China and Iran, based on UNICEF data. So why is the US maternal mortality rate so high? It may have to do with how we fill out death certificates. A study from earlier this year found that misfiling of information in death certificates may be inflating the numbers. Here's SciFri guest host Maggie Kurth with more.
Earlier this summer, researchers uncovered evidence that's suggesting that high death rate is just a trick of record keeping. You know, people who fill out death certificates can check a box showing whether the person who died was pregnant, and all those deaths are counted as maternal mortalities. But the study found that the actual cause of death in those cases isn't always pregnancy-related. With only pregnancy-related statistics counted, the study found that U.S. maternal mortality falls by half, down to 10.4 per 100,000 people, which brings us back into line with countries like Canada and the United Kingdom. And this brings us to an interesting and complicated problem. Data collected on death certificates is a crucial part of how we track public health, but that data does not always cleanly represent reality. It's got some flaws that have shown up in several stories I've covered as a journalist, from maternal mortality to gun violence to even early COVID deaths. If you want to know how Americans really die, you have to know how death certificates work, who fills them out, and how this data from all over the country gets compiled into national statistics. Joining me to talk about that today is Dr. Robert Anderson, Chief of the Statistical Analysis and Surveillance Branch of the National Center for Health Statistics. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
So let's start from a really basic place. When somebody dies in the United States, how do we record information about that death?
Well, every state in the United States requires that a death be registered with the state. Well, it's actually a little bit more than just the state. In some cases, New York City, for example, is separate from the rest of New York State for vital registration purposes. But generally, we're talking about states. At the National Center for Health Statistics here, we have an arrangement with 57 jurisdictions, 50 states, District of Columbia, New York City, and five territories. And those jurisdictions are responsible for registering the deaths. So when someone dies, typically a funeral director takes charge of the body and is responsible for disposition of that body. And they're also usually responsible for starting the death record, the death certificate. So the funeral director provides basic personal and demographic information about the decedent. And then a physician, medical examiner, or coroner, depending on the circumstances, is then responsible for providing the cause of death information. So that information is then compiled, it's registered by the state, and then the state sends that information to us for the national data file.
And that process of determining the cause of death, who is that? Is it always somebody with a medical background? Does that ever change as you go from local record keeping to the national compilation of all of that data?
Yeah, it's not always somebody with medical training. Usually it's a physician in the case of natural causes. In the case of injury-related deaths or deaths that occur suddenly and unexpectedly or that may be suspicious, it's a medical examiner or a coroner. And the medical examiner is always a physician, usually a forensic pathologist, with extensive training. But the coroner may be an elected person, maybe a former law enforcement officer or a lawyer. In Texas, the justice of the peace often acts as the coroner, and they may not have medical training, although they typically contract with physicians to provide information about the cause of death, to do autopsies and things like that.
So how do you standardize it? You know, these death reports come in from all over the country, and you have different people that have different ideas of how things should be recorded. How does that all get, you know, kind of mushed together at the end?
Well, vital statistics in the United States is highly standardized, and we've been doing this for a long time. You know, the vital statistics system in the United States goes back more than 100 years. And, you know, as a result, we've come up with standardized format for reporting. And so all certifiers use the same standardized format to report the cause of death. So that doesn't mean that we don't have variation from certifier to certifier. You know, we do, but at least the format in which they report is the same state to state.
So we have this example this year of a study that found this discrepancy in how maternal mortality statistics are getting reported, and it's resulting in us thinking that there are more of these deaths than might actually be there. And I'm curious if there are other examples of situations where you've seen something like a large-scale misreporting, or even just situations where there's confusion and debate over what we should be taking away from these death certificates.
Well, we certainly saw some confusion in the early parts of the COVID pandemic, and you reported on that. The main reason was because a lot of the certifiers, a lot of the cause of death certifiers, didn't really understand what it was that they were looking at early in the pandemic. And so we saw increases in pneumonia deaths, Alzheimer's disease, cardiovascular deaths, diabetes deaths. Those in particular, we saw pretty huge spikes early in the pandemic due to those causes. And, you know, in retrospect, looking back, it's almost certain that those spikes were actually COVID deaths, affecting people who had comorbidities that were risk factors for severe disease.
What similarities do you see between these different types of misreported deaths and maternal mortality? You know, like, are there common threads when you're looking at something like what happened with COVID and what's happening with maternal mortality? Are there things that sort of connect them and point to some systemic issue with how we treat mortality data?
Well, maternal mortality is kind of a tricky issue. You know, we have studied this issue extensively at the CDC. And if you go back to, you know, pre-2003, when the death certificate was modified to add this checkbox, the studies were showing that we underestimated maternal mortality by 40, 50%. So we were underestimating substantially. And it was thought that if we added this checkbox, that would resolve the issue. So that checkbox was added in the 2003 standard certificate. The problem that we had was not all states implemented it at the same time. So it took 15 years. For all states to implement that standard certificate, the pregnancy checkbox item in particular. As we were getting to the point where we felt like we had sufficient information and all states were reporting in the same way, we also discovered that there were errors in the checkbox, that checkbox item was prone to error, and that we were seeing in some cases decedents that were checked as pregnant who weren't actually pregnant. And most of these were in the older age range. So, you know, when we discover things like this, we take it very seriously. And so we did make some modifications to our coding procedures to mitigate those errors. And then we've also instituted some follow back certifiers to confirm information as well. So we are working to address these issues. We know that we probably are counting some deaths that shouldn't be counted, but we're also still missing some deaths, because if no pregnancy information is reported, then we can't count it as a maternal death. And there are maternal deaths out there where pregnancy may exacerbate an existing condition that should be counted as maternal death, but wouldn't be if we didn't know the circumstances of a pregnancy.
So with COVID and with this, there's this kind of situation happening where you're simultaneously knowing that there's undercounts and there's overcounts, and they're happening at the same time. And I'm curious if there's ever a way to solve that kind of problem, or do you just kind of have to chip away at these overcounts and these undercounts little by little and sort of hope to get closer to the truth? You know, is there any way to actually get truth?
Well, there's no way to completely solve these issues. I mean, the fact is that determining the cause of death is not always straightforward. It can be very difficult, very complicated to determine what somebody died from, particularly if they die from an undiagnosed condition. Diagnosing that condition after the fact can be very difficult, even with a complete autopsy. So, you know, I do want to acknowledge that, you know, certifying the cause of death, determining the cause of death is hard, often very hard. There are going to be times when the cause of death just isn't apparent and the certifier has to make their best judgment. And in some cases, that judgment may be wrong. It's just the nature of medicine. So there's no way to completely make it go away. That said, I mean, there are some things we can do. And with maternal mortality, I mean, we did make some changes in coding to mitigate errors. We have working with the states to do linkages between the death record and birth records and fetal death records to try to get at the outcome of the pregnancy, to determine whether there was a pregnancy. And we're trying to get certifiers to confirm the information that they're reporting on death certificates to try to catch errors at the source. So we are trying to do things like that. With COVID, we tried to educate certifiers to make them aware of what the issues were, how to determine whether decedent had had COVID, and then how to certify the cause of death properly.
Yeah, I remember when I was reporting on gun violence in the past, we ran into some really interesting problems that kind of boiled down to, you know, like who is doing the certification and their subjective opinion of a situation. And that came into play in particular when you're trying to determine what is an accidental gun violence death versus what is a homicide versus what is a suicide. And that seems like a particularly difficult place because there's not necessarily a single right answer. It's not necessarily something you can just educate your way out of. And I'm curious how you guys deal with those kind of problems.
So sometimes you have a situation where homicide might be defined as death at the hands of another, regardless of intent. And a lot of medical examiners and coroners take that approach. They define, so you might have an accidental shooting, but if one person shot another person, then it would be considered a homicide. That said, if the certifier provides sufficient information about the circumstances, we can code to an accident if it's clear that the circumstances were accidental. So we take the narrative that the certifier reports as the sort of we give priority to that information rather than the manner of death item, because we know that sometimes there are these discrepancies. So if even with a homicide, if it's clear that the circumstances say that it was accidental, then we would code the death as unintentional rather than as a homicide. So we can mitigate it to some extent if we have sufficient information to do that. The National Center for Injury Prevention and Control also has a system called the National Violent Death Reporting System, which collects additional information to try to deal with those issues, to get at those homicides that may actually be accidental.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Support for Science Friday comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science, technology, and economics in the modern world.
How does our way of tracking death affect how we look at public health across the nation? You know, are there things coming out of these death tracking systems that affect how we legislate around things, how we understand things?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not really involved in the policymaking part of things. The National Center for Health Statistics is a statistical agency. We provide data and we focus on the data specifically and on the statistical part of things. But we do know that the information that we provide, and that's part of the intent of providing the information, is for policymaking so that people can take that information and allocate resources and develop programs and policies that will improve health generally. And so, you know, it is important that our data be as accurate as possible so that it can inform programs and policies in an efficient way.
Are there any other causes of death that you're watching right now or that you've been digging into just to kind of make them more accurate? You know, other places where you see problems popping up?
Another thing that we're looking at carefully are heat-related deaths. That's another one that can be very tricky. So, you know, if somebody dies from heat stroke, that's usually fairly apparent, but the heat can exacerbate pre-existing conditions as well. And so while there might not be substantial heat damage to the body directly, the heat can, you know, cause somebody with cardiovascular disease to have a heart attack, or can cause other sorts of problems in people with multiple comorbidities. So one of the things we're trying to do is to educate certifiers to be aware of this and to make sure that if they think heat was involved, that they report it on the death certificate so that we can count it.
I'm sort of curious that, you know, when you have something like a heat death issue, you end up having these kinds of downstream political implications, because if you're counting heat death, you're often talking about climate change, and that can have implications for how people approach climate funding or how they approach research. And I'm sort of curious about, you know, like where you are coming at this from a perspective of science and a perspective of record keeping. Do you ever think about those political implications?
Not directly. I mean, obviously we're thinking about how our data are used, and we're thinking about how we can provide the best data possible. But ultimately, you know, the policymaking and the programmatic stuff is out of our hands. So we don't think about that stuff directly. I mean, we have enough to worry about just to get the data and make sure that it's of sufficient quality and to get it out in a timely fashion. So that's really where our focus is. We don't really think too much about the other stuff, other than that we know that the data have to be good so that folks can use it for that purpose.
That's great. Thank you so much. This has been really interesting, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Ah, you're very welcome. It was fun.
That was Dr. Robert Anderson, Chief of the Statistical Analysis and Surveillance Branch at the National Center for Health Statistics.
And that's all the time we have for now. A lot of folks helped make this show happen this week, including
Kathleen Davis,
Diana Plasker,
Beth Ramey,
Danielle Johnson,
Santiago Flores,
and many more. On tomorrow's episode, the history of teeth, from ancient fish to our pearly whites. But for now, I'm Sci-Fi Radio Fellow Valeria Diaz. Thanks for listening.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.